Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
This is Seed Pod, a new series from Completely Arbitrary, where we sit down and converse with tree-related people.
Maybe we'll play a game, maybe we'll draw a picture together or whittle a spoon, but no matter what, it's always a pleasant chat with someone who loves trees.
This week we bring you local Portland tree legend, Phyllis Reynolds. She's a photographer, tree activist, and author of Trees of Greater Portland, among other books.
Also, she's an original member of the Portland Heritage Tree Committee. You're about to hear part of our conversation with Phyllis, but if you're a Tremium member, you will have access to the uncut video versions of these conversations.
If you're not already a Tremium member, head over to arbitrarypod.supercast.com or click the link in the description to support the show.
Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man, I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
It sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over. But I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6 or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well,
the glare
would be great
goes
for,
away.
These would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex, I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for Completely Arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods.
Yeah, if you would, Phyllis, could you introduce yourself? And if you're willing to tell us how old you are.
I'm Phyllis Reynolds, and I am, let's see, 94 and a half.
94 and a half. Is your half birthday in January?
No, December. So I'm over.
So you're a little over half. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, happy half birthday.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and the second thing is, so I'm Casey Clapp. We've met before. You obviously have met Alex Croson, my co-host with the podcast. And so when we were driving up, Alex is like, well, what are we gonna talk about? And we didn't really say, you know, I said, oh, well, it's Phyllis Reynolds. She's famous and all these things. And then he asked, well, what does she do? And I was like, you know, actually, I know she's written books, but I'm not actually sure. So I also wanted to see if you would be willing to regale us what you have done, because you don't work anymore, as far as I know, at least in terms of professionally.
I'm not gainfully employed.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, us neither.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe you could argue employed. Gainfully,
yeah,
you've gone
right,
too
right.
far.
There's no gainfully for me.
Yeah, so what is it that you used to do, or what do you do now?
Well, I used to do, at one time, I was a shrink. Mm-hmm. I was a clinical psychologist at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
And I was on the faculty of the medical school there. Mm-hmm. I am from Portland.
Yeah.
And I am a native, but my husband and I lived in Minnesota for 20 years. Mm. And he was on the faculty also. So I became a shrink at the student health service
gotcha.
At the university, which I liked. And then we decided we didn't want to die in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And so we moved back to Portland, uh-huh. where our parents were.
Okay.
I tried private practice here, didn't like it very well.
Hmm.
And then I very slowly kind of got into, no, I was an artist, actually. I was a professional artist. It was showed in galleries all over. I was a printmaker.
Really? Printmaking?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Etching, monotypes, etc.
Really?
Yeah.
That is, for me, like, I've always imagined etching. I have a lot of, like, older books where etching was, like, the standard of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always like, how do people do this in such, like, detail? I had no idea you did etching.
Yeah. Well, there are etchings and there are etchings. There's etchings in copper,
uh-huh.
Where you dig into it and so forth. Yeah. And then there's etchings that I did on zinc, which you use an acid to eat out the groove that you put the ink in, etc. But I did that until, I can't remember the year, but the small galleries around everywhere, mm-hmm. the state, and I showed in California a little bit too, and Washington, they all kind of collapsed.
Really?
The business went down the tube.
Yeah. Mm.
And so I stopped being an etcher because why make umpteen dozen prints of something that you're not going to
sell? Yeah, it's not going to go anywhere. Yeah.
What kind of things did you etch? Like, what were your sort of subjects that you really were drawn toward?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, I was pretty much straightforward. But then I liked monoprints a lot, which mm-hmm. is just one thing on a piece of metal.
Okay.
And I got more excited about that and did kind of abstract things.
Hmm.
I really like that. I've got stuff around here somewhere. I did a lot. And then I stopped doing that. And about that time was when I first got interested in trees.
Uh-huh.
Robbie Robinson, who was affiliated with the city, who did a whole lot about trees in parks and the city, gave me a list of trees in the city that he thought they were important trees.
Yeah.
And so I and my co-author at the time went around and looked at these trees, and mm-hmm. we discovered a whole lot of them were gone.
Yeah.
And so we decided we would write a book. Maybe a book would save a few trees.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it did, but
I love the irony of that, you know, write a book to save trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
So anyway, we did it. Then she died before the book was written.
Mm.
And so I wrote the book and did all the photographs, did all the measuring, and so on.
And this is Trees of Greater Portland, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
The one, 1993 one.
1993, yeah.
Then I got into photography. I'm thinking chronologically here.
Mm-hmm.
I got into photography, and I kind of like that, because the single lens reflex cameras came out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and Alex, do you know about this? I don't know anything about this
Casey,
kind of camera.
Casey, when we say DSLR SLR, that's single lens reflex.
Oh.
SLR, right.
Ah, okay, yeah. All right.
Right.
Thank you.
I know them as DSLR because I, you know.
Now it's digital.
That's
right?
When I got into photography.
I see.
But
SLR.
Well, yeah, and I started out on that. That was great.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, you could use a computer and da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And then iPhones came out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I no longer have an SLR camera. But I did a lot of photography and had shows and so forth. And I'm a member of the Portland Garden Club, mm-hmm. which I was head of photography of the group there that was doing photography, okay. et cetera.
Yeah.
I started it, actually. That was good. Well, I still do photography, but I don't do anything professional.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because I've got my iPhone in my pocket.
So you're a photographer wherever you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's I think when I first came across your name, because I also grew up just here in Portland, technically Milwaukee, and then went around to the East Coast and went up to Seattle to do work and then came back down to Portland. And when I got down to Portland, I ran across your book. It was actually in a Goodwill. So someone had bought it and then I found it again. And I was like, Trees of Greater Portland. This is exactly the book that I want. This is great.
Yeah.
Good find.
It was a great find. I still to this day am like kind of stunned that I found it. I don't think I've ever seen like a local regional kind of guide at a Goodwill. But I didn't even know it existed. I didn't know you had existed before that. And then I ended up getting a job at the city of Portland as an inspector, and your name just kind of was ephemeral. It just came up all the time. Where someone would bring it up and say, oh, Phyllis Reynolds. And then you'd see an email or see a response, you know, oh, from Phyllis Reynolds. Like, oh, Phyllis reached out. And I was like, who is this? Who is this person? And
you know what's funny, Casey? That's sort of how our relationship was in the beginning. In high school, I knew of Casey. He was always the subject of everybody's wildest stories. See?
Wow, great.
He was this Paul Bunyan figure out there.
Well, thank you, Alex. I'm glad to be in such a nice company here. Well, I heard your name all the time. And then like people would just, they would tell it. And I have to say, whenever I would say, well, who is Phyllis Reynolds? They would usually respond like, oh, you don't know Phyllis Reynolds. And so you had this reputation of being like a very intense protector of trees. Like you spoke out for trees a lot. And then I learned when I talked with you a couple weeks ago that you were very integral in starting the Heritage Tree, either the committee or the program with the city. Is that true?
I didn't start it. Yeah. Jane Glazer started it. Kevin Hillary and I were original members of her committee.
Yeah.
And Jane didn't know much about trees. Mm-hmm. She was adamant about saving them, but her knowledge of trees. And so she formed this committee with Kevin and me and a couple of other arborists and so forth. And we would go around and look at trees and say, yes, that should be a heritage tree. Mm-hmm. And then the whole and then Jane quit after, I don't know, 4 years or something. I became head of the Heritage Tree Committee.
Gotcha.
At that point, Kevin was still on my committee, and I continued that for some time until I got very pissed by the Portland ombudsman who made a decision about heritage trees that they had to make a heritage tree. Mm-hmm. All of the neighbors where any root might go had to sign that they agreed.
Really?
Yes.
So what was the rule initially before that? How did you
there
guys make
no
heritage
rule.
Tree? It was just the
owner of the trunk.
Yeah.
And so forth. Okay. Was the one who signed
so
the
if it's,
thing.
So if it's on your property,
yeah.
you could say, I agree that this. And they would just sign a paper, essentially.
Yes. Mm. And unfortunately, it didn't go on to a deed or anything like that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I think it does now.
It does, yeah. Since 2015, that was a big move that the city had to do.
Do you have any particularly strong memories of trees that you worked really hard for, that you won and the tree stayed, or that it you know... somebody got the rights to cut it down. It was like a heartbreaker. Casey is all the time showing up to work going, I can't believe they're going to take that tree down on so-and-so and 45th. And anything?
Well, the biggest one comes to my mind is the Overlook Oak.
Yeah.
That is totally threatened by development.
Mm.
And we fought and fought and fought and everything about it. He, the guy who wants to develop it, won.
Mm-hmm.
So this poor tree that is about 150, no. Yeah, well, it, at least 150.
At least 150, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there's one, there's an oak. This is a Gary oak. There's a Gary oak in Newburgh, mm-hmm. which is on the Oregon list.
Yeah, the Oregon Heritage Tree list.
That planting of the acorn is known, the date.
Oh, really?
Wow. So that's,
and it's the same size as the one in Overlook.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's...
So you can do a pretty good comparison there.
You can, yeah. And this tree in Overlook has lived its life in luxury. And suddenly it's going to get its roots cut, its branches cut, and it'll die probably in about 12 years.
Okay.
Wow.
And that's very sad to me.
Yeah.
And that's been set in motion. That's happening for sure.
That's happening. The guy owns, he hasn't developed it yet, mm-hmm. but he's owns the land. He's got it platted and so forth. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, initially they were going to try it, Alex, to put three houses right next to this tree.
Yeah.
And put the branches come all the way down to the ground. It's 54 inches in diameter. So it's a gigantic tree.
Wow.
Yeah. And most people could lay down inside the cross section of the tree and not actually get outside of the bark. That's how big it is. And
with their arms outstretched like this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it used to be that they were going to put three houses right up next to it, and they would have had to cut branches, which is not allowed per the law.
Mm-hmm.
It's so a heritage tree.
It's a heritage tree. Yeah.
Did you sign off on that one, on the Overlook Oak being a heritage tree?
I got it to be a heritage tree.
Really?
I talked to a woman named Mrs. Benson owned the house that is on the property. She owned all of the property.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She was getting on, and she decided she wanted to save the tree. The best way she knew of was to make it a heritage tree. So I visited her, and we talked, and she was a nice person and so forth. And she signed. She was delighted the tree was going to get saved.
Yeah.
And then she did die. Her son got the land and sold it to a developer.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, at the minimum, they went from those three houses to just two houses and pulled them back.
Yeah.
So it's at least it's not as bad as it was, because I was working for the city. That's another one of those instances when your name came up, along with Kevin's and a lot of other arborists, because that was a case that I had, but then I quit the city before it moved through kind of a second round.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very curious to see, with your 12 years, I'm going to remember this and see. I'm going to keep an eye on it. And it's a tree that is exceptional in every regard. And I think that ideally, with the two houses kind of move further away and not that third house, I'm hoping not to be against you, but I'm hoping you're wrong, that it's going to last more. So we'll keep an eye on it.
Well, the roots.
The roots,
we know
how
far the roots go.
That's right.
And we know what the ends of the roots are important for.
Mm-hmm.
Gathering nutrients.
It's all nutrients.
Those
it's all
ends.
Water.
And those ends are going to get cut off.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
It really is, yeah.
And so I really think the tree won't die overnight.
No. Yeah, it'll be the slow kind of decline.
Slowly decline.
Well, so in that regard, one thing I also was curious about is that you started really looking at trees in the city in, you said 93 was when you put out the Trees of Greater Portland. So ostensibly in the late 80s, you were in it, looking around, starting to, get involved with the city's trees. So is there anything that you look back on and you're just like, how has the city changed, I guess, in terms of urban forestry?
Well, the arborist, what was he called? The city...
Yeah, city forester is what it is now?
City forester, yeah. Was a guy who... He was a nice guy, but I ended up not agreeing with him a lot. Uh-huh. And he'd cut down trees that I think he shouldn't have, mm-hmm. and so forth. And so I was very glad when he, whatever he did, retired or something or other.
Yeah.
1993 is about the time that Friends of Trees started.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so there was a move kind of at that time of making sure that Portland had trees. Mm-hmm. Joe Peraske down at the Portland State, who was head of geography down there, mm-hmm. was a big pusher for canopy saving.
Ugh,
and he was head of the commission for Portland.
Yeah, because this is right now, we call it the Urban Forestry Commission now. And essentially, it had another, it was the same group, but it was kind of more unofficial, I guess, back then.
No, it was official? Quite official.
Okay, yeah.
And we were official enough to hear complaints that people had.
Mm-hmm.
If the city forester said, no, you can't cut that down, they could come to us and say, well, my case is I need to cut this tree down, and mm-hmm. we would make the final decision.
So you could overrule the city forester?
Yes, yes, we could.
Oh, wow, nice.
Now that's power.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever like feel like you're sitting on a throne just waiting for people to come to you?
No, you know, it didn't happen that much, but people did come. Yeah. My neighbor, right across the street came.
Really?
He had a huge, well, I counted the rings, 70-year-old Doug fir.
Wow, huge, but only 70. So that's like a young tree in terms of Doug's fir.
Well, this was all logged in 1950.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he wanted to cut it down because it was right in the middle of his driveway.
Mm.
And I was opposed to his cutting it down because it was a beautiful tree.
Yeah.
And it was a living, beautiful Doug fir.
Yeah.
But the commission voted to let him cut it down, and it got cut down.
Yeah.
That's how I could count the
I was going to say, yeah. We kind of we knew how that story was going to end.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that driveway now? You like that? Is it a good-looking driveway?
No. No, it goes all of the houses over there go it slopes way down.
Yeah. I constantly have said to myself, nobody moves to Portland. Nobody stays in Portland because we have such beautiful driveways. Our driveways are so spectacular. I say this to myself all the time, and I've yet to say it to an engineer somewhere, but I always am like, why are we cutting down all these things that are like, that's the reason. Like, everyone thinks of Oregon and Portland and the Pacific Northwest as like trees. That's what they think of. So whenever we end up cutting down a big, beautiful tree for something as innocuous as a driveway, I'm like, can't you just move the driveway? And like 90% of the time you can. So it's always, that's what I think, one of my biggest frustrations.
Yeah.
Do you think you would make a book called Driveways of Greater Portland?
Yeah.
Different types of concrete.
Well, I also think there is something about some men, and I think it's only men, who kind of feel they own the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, on their property, they own everything. And they can cut it down if they want. It's kind of a power thing.
Yeah.
I am not surprised to hear
like
that.
Like, they want to do it just because they can.
Yes. I own this tree. Yeah. I can cut it down. And they do.
Totally.
And I don't think women do that.
I think you're right. Yeah. We've actually run into that a few times just doing different stories for the podcast and talking about the role of the term I learned about in college is ecofeminism, where there's this active kind of line of philosophy that is exactly that, where there is this philosophical difference, even going down to language and culture, about men and women's interactions with trees.
Mm-hmm.
And even the land in terms of like Mother Nature and like language that is used about how it's destroyed, like, oh, you raped this, you know, piece of land. And it's very much a, you know, rapes are usually a one directional kind of thing. So it's one of those things. I think you're spot on with that kind of,
well,
that idea.
Bottom line, I think it's testosterone.
Uh-huh.
I really do think that there's a hormonal thing that gets men into that.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, fighting wars, whatever.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
This dominance kind of thing. Yeah. Well, I can imagine that in the 30, or like what? Yeah, I guess it's 30 years now since you came out that book. So 40 mm-hmm. years. When did you move back to Portland, actually, from Minnesota?
We moved back in 1977.
Okay, yes. That's a significant amount of time to be able to look around and think, like, watch the whole city change. Yeah. Like, in the 70s, Portland, what was it like? Do you have decent memories of all the great fun that was there?
We moved to this house, and we've lived here. We lived here all the time. Yes. I grew up on Arlington Heights.
Okay, gotcha.
And I grew up about 1,000 feet from the Arboretum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, just down the street.
And so I would, back in the early 40s, walk in the Arboretum a lot.
Wow.
And it was quite young then.
I was going to say, it was only 20 years old around that time.
Right, yeah. And I rode horses in the Arboretum.
You rode horses in the Arboretum.
Yeah, there was a riding academy down in Sylvan.
Yeah.
There were bridle paths because there were no houses over there, so there were bridle paths all the way up. And then we'd just go down the street, go to the Arboretum, and ride horses, which was not legal at all.
Yeah, okay.
But we did it.
Hey, now, it was fun, though,
we'll,
right?
We'll bleep this out. I don't want you to incriminate yourself at this age. I don't think that's what you need right now.
You don't want the equestrian people coming after you.
They always do, yeah. And ironically, it would be a horse cop that would come. So, you know it.
Well, a lot of people around here had horses.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
They had stables right down on the street and so forth. And right down here, yeah.
Yeah. So what was the Arboretum like back then?
Well, yeah, and it was... you know, who knew about trees? I mean, who knew that these were exotic trees?
Yeah.
There were no labels on them back then, I don't think.
Yeah.
And it was just a place to walk. Mm-hmm. For, I would say, 75% of the people today, it's a place to walk.
It is just a place to walk.
They don't give a hoot about trees.
Yeah, yeah.
Walk your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's close, et cetera. That's okay if your dog is on a leash.
Yeah. Alex would agree with you.
Well, this is
wholeheartedly.
Portland. There are few dogs on leashes in
this
city.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a nice place. And when we rode horses there, there's a flat place where the road, where Fisher Lane now goes, which is kind of flat right before you get to Burnside.
Yeah.
And we used to race the horses on that flat spot.
Yeah, yeah. Was this before it was paved or was it paved at the time?
No, it wasn't paved.
Yeah, that would be kind of a scary thing to have horses just like sprinting down a paved road.
Fisher Lane didn't exist then.
Really? Okay, it was just that area. It was just like a path maybe.
Right. It was just flat. Mm. And I should know when Fisher Lane was put in, but I can't remember. Yeah. But it wasn't then. There weren't roads. And Ernie Fisher was very good.
Is that Fisher Lane is named after Ernie?
Yeah.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah. And he did an awful lot of planting and stuff. And right. So it didn't look like it does now, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm.
And I used to get, I was taking, I went a year to Lincoln High School.
Mm-hmm.
And took biology there, and I would go into the Arboretum and collect samples of things.
Really?
It's
right down the street, your backyard.
Yeah, right.
Now, again, we're not going to tell the Arboretum that you were taking things, clippings from. Just to be clear, this is a safe podcast.
You know, here I am at the ripe old age of 35. And one thing that has become really important to me just over the last couple of years is privacy. Besides what I tell you here on the podcast, I basically don't want anyone to know anything about me unless I choose to tell them. And one way I up my privacy game is with NordVPN. Now, if you are like me and didn't know what a VPN was until a couple of weeks ago, let me tell you, a VPN is a virtual private network. And I said to myself, well, sure, that sounds cool, but I really don't know what it is or does. And then the moment I turned it on, I said, I get it now. A VPN changes your IP address, hides your virtual location, and encrypts your connection, which allows you to increase your privacy online.
How many times per day do you get scam calls or spam email because your data got leaked somehow? I also get emails from companies saying, hey, I see you bought something with us recently. Unfortunately, we got hacked and your data is now being used to harm you. With a VPN, you do not have to worry about any of this. It secures you when you're using public Wi-Fi. It stops marketers and internet service providers from tracking and collecting your browsing history and your messages and lots of other private data. And you can change your location to any of hundreds of countries, unlocking the power of, I don't know, say, British Netflix. I didn't know how important it was until I started using one. That's the truth. So if you just want to check out the features and see if it's right for you, I bet there's something about a VPN that will surprise you. So get started with NordVPN at nordvpn.com/trees. That's nordvpn.com/trees. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link is in the description. Now go get secure.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Your the famous other thing I've brought up a few times is your book, which is Trees of Greater Portland. So you went to each one of these trees. Do you remember how many you have in the book? Or either edition, because you have two editions now.
Now, oh goodness. It's written in the book, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know if I've read it. I just went straight to the actual trees when because I'm writing my own book right now in your kind of style, I guess, about the trees of the Pacific Northwest a little broadly. But I've been going to each one of yours, and just the way you got that list from the old city forester, several of these trees have also been cut down now that I've gone to. Mm. And some of them, like there's American chestnuts, they got removed, but they had the blight, you know, it was a matter of time. But others, they've disappeared. Like I would go to it and I would use it all the time, but it's just interesting to see and to hear that it was different or the same. You've had the same experience essentially. Getting this list and finding they're gone, trying to protect them and kind of open people's eyes to these trees and things. So I'm curious what your experience was like going and finding all of these incredible trees in Portland, because even the ones that exist still today, they're stunning. Some of them, I'm like, how did you find these trees?
I know. You know? Well, one thing I found a lot of the trees, well, people told me about lots of the trees. Mm-hmm. I also just cruised Portland. Yeah. I would drive around and practically kill myself seeing a tree at the same time I was moving in the car. You know, going to older neighborhoods would be where the bigger trees are.
It's always where the big ones are, yeah. Mm.
And when I was driving, I would go into places where I was really surprised at the size of trees. These were old neighborhoods that I had missed.
Gotcha.
There are a lot of them. Portland's a big place.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of remnant trees from like an old farm area that then got developed and they didn't cut down that, you know, small grove of Doug firs or oaks or something.
Yeah.
Are there any trees in particular that you remember that you were, maybe you found and you didn't know, like you kind of almost discovered, I guess would be a fine term. Mm. You are specifically proud that you found or something?
I had a good friend, Stan. He was a tree ID nut. He could do it. He didn't know much about most things in the world, but he knew a lot about trees. And he was the one who helped on the original book. Mm-hmm. He would say, well, go over there and look at that tree. He would cruise Portland a lot to find trees. Okay. But he was kind of an idiot savant. I mean, he knew so much about trees.
Yeah.
And so little about anything else,
right?
That's how I feel about Casey, except for the second part.
I feel that way about myself, though, all the time.
He's a very well-rounded person, but he's also a savant.
Just talk to me about trees, and then as soon as you get to something else, I slowly bring it back to trees, because it's the only thing I can possibly know about.
We made a whole podcast about
so
it, Casey.
So far, it's worked. Thanks. Thank you, Alex. I appreciate that. That is we'll make sure to show everyone this book and have them search it out. As I know you can buy them at the Arboretum. That's where I got your most recent edition.
Yeah. Mm.
The book idea, I was inspired by your book to write mine and a couple others from other kind of, mostly I saw gaps and I was like, okay, I want to do a book like this. But for all the not as interesting and cool trees, because you show the most amazing specimens of all the coolest trees.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be like, well, okay, well, what about that dumb birch right there? We got to include birch too.
And that's great.
Yeah.
Because people will want to know, what is this tree I've got in my front yard?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm hoping. Yeah.
And they don't know. So a book like yours will be a real help.
Oh, thank you. I'm hoping that it will be.
Yeah.
He's going to put that on the cover, that poll quote.
This will be a good help. I think that'll be good. If I can quote you on the back, maybe I'll do that.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Phyllis, is there a book that you never got to write that you think, man, I wish I had written a book on that?
Hmm. Oh, good question. No, I still would like to write a book about certain aspects of trees, but... You know, most people could care less about a tree, let alone the certain aspects of it.
Sure.
I still would like to investigate certain things about trees or plants or something or other that people haven't. Yeah. And I can't be more specific than that because I don't know.
Just a little inkling of an idea.
Yeah, read into it. Yeah, yeah. Well, if you come up with anything and you want some help, let me know. Because that's my current job is literally just doing research on things that I don't know about.
Yeah.
To try to tell people about it. Because I think one thing that I have found, and I think Alex, you too, with doing the podcast, is that people apparently very much do care about these interesting things about trees. I thought that we were starting some, you know, esoteric podcast that not, you know, maybe a few people would be interested in. Alex famously thought we were going to make 6 episodes and then be done. And now we're on 140
something.
Really? Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. 140.
3 years
it's our
worth.
Third year now. Just this, our anniversary actually, I think will be the 6th or the 7th. So the famous January 6th of 2021. That is our anniversary date. So we remember it every time.
Yeah.
That is, so I think that if you ever, if you do sit down and decide that, I'm gonna type some things up or do some research, there are people out there who are really interested in it. It's just that with the age of the internet, everyone appears as an expert. So anyone can make a video, can put out something and say, I'm an expert, and then give you some information. And if you are not either skilled enough to actually kind of dissect what they're saying or have the background where you say, yeah, that person does have the reputation to know, they really do know their stuff, then you can find that they the expertness level has gone down, but the amount of information has gone up significantly.
Well, right. But then I have read that 30% of what you get from, like, if you Google something is wrong.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that at all.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
So people are quoting 30% of the time, whatever they're quoting is not right.
You know, that's actually funny that you say that, because our podcast is famously, like, it's from my experience mostly, and then I do my research to make sure I'm getting facts mostly right. But historically, we have ironically, I think coincidentally, not ironic, have always said, our podcast is about 70% accurate. And then every now and then we might say something that just isn't quite 100%. And so I love that you called out 30%, because that lines up with what we've always said. But we're a casual show. We don't, we never have meant to be a hard science, you know, get your PhD based on what I say in this episode.
Yeah.
You know, it's more like, we've done our research and this is it. If you need more information, here's the extra stuff.
I corrected you once.
You did?
Did you really?
When we were talking?
On Don Redwood's, yeah.
You did. You sent an
Please
email to me.
Tell us about this, Phyllis.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yes, I remember this email,
actually. Well, it was that you said there wasn't a 1948 seed in the Arboretum.
Mm-hmm.
That was collected in China, and there is.
Yeah. I didn't know that it had been sent here. We talked about this in our extra episode. Yeah, I think Becky with the Arboretum sent it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Alex. I withheld that from you because I was ashamed.
Wow. You knew that I would look at you differently.
I knew you would. Yeah.
Let's hear the podcast regrets the error.
The podcast regrets the error. I'm sorry, Phyllis.
Thank you for fact-checking us, Phyllis.
Well, thanks very much for sitting down with us and talking for an hour or so.
Huh?
Yeah, really appreciate it.
It's fun.
All right.
Any parting words for anyone?
Keep the trees.
There you have it.
Easy as that.